This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. People who abstain from alcohol have many different reasons for doing so. But there's a growing trend among millennials who have given rise to the term sober curious. So what does that mean? Let's talk about it with sober curious author Ruby Warrington, who joins us via Skype. Welcome, Ruby.
Hi there.
Alcohol Alchemy founder Lindsay Laubenstein. Welcome, Lindsay.
Laubenstein. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for correcting me on the air. I mispronounced our previous guest's name, too, and she didn't get a correction in until the break. So say it again.
Laubenstein. Kind of like Frankenstein.
All right, I got it. My apologies to Lindsay Laubenstein. Welcome, Lindsay.
Thank you.
And Women and Moms Living Alcohol-Free founder Nori Muro.
Murrow.
Oh my gosh, I got an F today.
That's okay.
Nori Murrow, welcome. Nori, I appreciate
Thank you.
It. So Ruby, you wrote the book Sober Curious. It's described as an eye-opening new way to think about our relationship with alcohol and as revealing the enormous benefits that comes with unlearning the mindless habit of drinking. It claims there's greater joy, clarity, confidence, and connection when choosing sobriety. So tell us about it. What does it mean to be sober curious?
So sober curious is a term that I coined about 4 or 5 years ago to describe my own shifting and conflicted relationship with alcohol. And what I found myself doing at the time was actually beginning to question, rather than kind of mindlessly, as you mentioned in the blurb, kind of go along with what I have termed the dominant drinking culture. If you think about it, we live in a society where alcohol and to drink is very much the norm. In fact, it's almost like the only people who don't drink are the people who can't drink, whether it's for religious reasons, perhaps for health reasons, or because they have a quote unquote problem with alcohol. To be a non-drinker by choice is very unusual. And so this term sober curious really means to question that, to question every impulse, instinct, or desire to drink, every invitation to drink, and also every expectation to drink, as opposed to just going along with it because it's what everybody does.
So when did you start to notice that you were feeling conflicted about consuming alcohol?
It was about 8 or 9 years ago. I was in my dream job. As you can hear from my accent, I'm from the UK originally, but I now live in Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, okay.
And I was in my dream job as a very high profile role in as a magazine journalist in London. And I found myself just anxious all of the time. Anxious and overwhelmed, and just not enjoying life in the way that I knew I should be. I had so many of the things that I'd wanted to achieve in my life, but I was miserable. And I really began to notice how the more I drank, the worse I felt. And this is like a kind of duh. We all know that on the other side of drinking to relax and feel good is the hangover that leads to us feeling bad, right? But it was around that time I began questioning the actual overall impact of my drinking on my well-being and on my moods and on my productivity and on my optimism. Because at the time, it wasn't like I had, like I said, you know, a problem with drinking. I wasn't drinking every day. I didn't feel a need to drink. I wasn't hiding my drinking from anybody. All of the cues that might have led to me thinking, well, perhaps I have a problem and should get myself to AA. My drinking wasn't at that level. And yet I knew the more I began to question it, there was a very clear connection between drinking alcohol and my overall mood, well-being, ability to show up in the world, ability to be there in my relationships. And so that was when the questioning began for me.
So if somebody is a drug addict, they're probably not posting on Facebook about, you know, that they're going to be doing cocaine on the weekend, or a professional who might smoke marijuana may not post a picture of themselves with a joint in their hand. But you see regular neighbors and family members and just regular old people posting social media images of themselves drinking wine in the middle of the day. And I wonder, how difficult is it to avoid drinks in our Western culture where it's so readily accessible and so widely acceptable?
I would say it's virtually impossible. And actually a big part of my mission with Sober Curious, with, you know, popularizing this term and encouraging people across the spectrum of drinking to question whether or not they want to engage with it, is to make it as normal not to drink as it is to drink. Because if you think about it, you know, the legal age for drinking in the States is 21. But for the most of us, we're exposed to alcohol way before that. And like I said, choosing not to drink in your teens when all you really want to do is fit in and be liked is marking you instantly as an outsider, a social pariah, and it's very difficult to resist the peer pressure around drinking. But not only in our teens. I mean, it's only when you begin to step away from the drinking culture that, well, in my case, you know, you begin to realize how much the peer pressure around drinking still very much follows us into our adult life. And it can be extremely intimidating to stand up to that.
So, Ruby, I wonder then, is there a challenge in moderating the consumption of alcohol? Is there not a gray area between drunkenness and sobriety?
In my experience and in the community that's grown up around the events that I've hosted on this over the years and the book now, it's very difficult for anyone who's been a regular kind of social drinker, and I mean, you know, weekly drinker, who's got to a point where they're questioning their drinking. Cutting back and attempts to moderate always lead back to drinking at the same level that you were when it was, you know, making you not feel great. And so my recommendation really is to cut it out completely, to think of yourself as a non-drinker, make that your baseline, and from there to choose extremely selectively when you may or may not want to use a drink or take a drink. And only after, I would recommend for anyone who really wants to establish that baseline, at least a break of 3 months to 6 months of drinking, just so that you can really get to feel all of the benefits of living hangover free.
And Nori, you considered yourself a gray area drinker at one time, somewhere between social and an alcoholic. You quit drinking without a 12-step program, which you said a relative needed. First, talk to us about what you thought that gray area was and why you thought it may be a problem for you.
Yeah. So, you know, as Ruby said, there's the spectrum of alcoholic moderation. For me, I didn't consider myself an alcoholic, but I also was not able to drink in moderation. So I knew that, you know, and I completely agree with Ruby, where you're questioning your overall drinking. It wasn't serving me right. I didn't like what it was doing to me at all. I was not happy with the woman I was, the mom, the wife, the friend. So I knew that I needed to stop. And it was very terrifying to think about it, because if you think about it, everything revolves around alcohol. So I thought, if I stop, my entire life will end. But I knew that I needed to take that leap. And I stopped drinking and literally threw myself into sort of building a holistic recovery toolbox. Social media, podcasts, books, tea, coffee. There's lots and lots of resources out there, and I'm a big researcher. So I kind of started reaching out, hashtag sober on Instagram, and reaching out to women out there. And just, you know, I knew it was something that I had to do. And my life has changed immensely. And I am very grateful for it.
And you read Ruby's book, Sober Curious.
I did. Okay. I absolutely loved it. And literally the entire book resonated with why I stopped, how I stopped. The 12 steps that she has in the back are phenomenal for anybody that's considering themselves a gray area in the middle. And the scary thing is like Ruby said, you know, it's virtually impossible to avoid it. You have yoga and yin, you know, yoga and happy hours afterwards. So, yeah. So anyway, 16, 17 months.
Sober.
Yes.
And Lindsay Lobenstein, you're immersed in the alcohol culture.
I am. I absolutely am. I work as a beverage director at the Phoenix as well. And like I said, I do my private consulting and freelancing where I create beverage lists and training programs and things like that for people. So my world revolves around alcohol. I was the president of the local chapter of the Bartenders Guild for 4 years, and I've been involved with that since 2011. So it's been my life. Alcohol has absolutely been a significant part of my life.
And so we're talking a little bit today about people who are trying to back away from alcohol. And I've got a list of headlines here that are all from relatively recent articles. Millennials are drinking less beer,
yes.
So beer is becoming more like juice. So they're still drinking alcohol, but they're fruitying it up a bit. They're young, they're fun, and they're alcohol-free. The Sober Curious movement takes off in Chicago. Millennials are sick of drinking. And big alcohol is bracing for a more sober future. So, Lindsay, being in the industry of nightlife and cocktail culture, are you seeing those headlines play out in real life?
I'm seeing them play out in my own industry, even with my colleagues. I have never been big on imbibing myself. I've always been very much a moderate with consuming, and I've always made it a cornerstone of what I do as a bartender and what I do as a bar professional and hospitalitarian to make that scene and to make restaurants and to make happy hours and all of those things accessible and acceptable to people who choose not to imbibe alcohol, to make non-alcoholic cocktails and beverages that are out of your ordinary, that aren't just your Coke or your Sprite or your ginger ale or your club soda, and to give people more options and more opportunities to enjoy themselves and feel like they're in that fun without having to worry about the alcohol aspects. And it's always frustrated me that people feel like they have to be drinking in those circumstances. I always would get so I don't know what the right word is, maybe frustrated, but a part of me inside hurt when people are like, oh, I want it to look like I'm drinking. Just put a lime in it so it looks like I'm drinking. And I hate that people feel like they have to do that. And I feel like alcohol is a choice that everybody, you know, should be able to make for themselves if they want to imbibe or if they don't imbibe for whatever those myriad of reasons are. And like I said, I have absolutely seen that play out in my industry even and at the people who are coming across my bar. When I was first tapped to come on this segment, I was talking to somebody on the phone, and just that afternoon we were open for restaurant week. I had the first person who stepped foot in my bar was looking for a non-alcoholic beverage and wanted something, you know, like, oh, I always scope out the cocktail list to see what I can, you know, get for a mocktail or what sort of thing they can build for me. And I was like, oh, you are sitting at the right bar right now for sure. I was like, I've got you covered. This is what I have in my back pocket. Let's work with what you like. And also, a lot of studies that have been going on, I remember when I was at Nightclub and Bar Show last year, Technomic did a couple of seminars. And one of the things you see is that alcohol purchasing has stayed reasonably steady. They're all somewhere within about 2% up or down. But the difference is that the lower quality spirits have dropped drastically and the cheaper spirits have dropped drastically in consumption and purchase, and the higher end stuff has gone up. So even though it's staying steady dollar-wise, that clearly shows a drop in consumption as far as volume goes, because they're paying more for alcohol and they're not buying as much of it. So it's staying, you know, relatively steady. And also friends, I feel like every week or two, I see at least one friend who has cut back significantly. I've seen bartenders who are going completely sober, and they're still managing to have outstanding careers as bartenders and bar professionals without consuming. And I love that people are being more vocal about it and that they're saying, this is something you can do, and you don't have to consume to be successful in this field either.
Ruby, you heard Lindsay mention there that people feel like they have to be drinking. So peer pressure, is that something that goes beyond our teenage years?
Absolutely. As I mentioned, there's a group in the UK called One Year No Beer. They offer a kind of year-long alcohol-free challenge for people. And they commissioned a report recently that showed that for 93% of people who consider changing their drinking habits, peer pressure is the number one thing that stops them. It's just so intimidating, the thought of walking into a bar being the only person not drinking, all the questions that come up. What's wrong with you? Why are you not drinking? Come on, join in. Oh, why are you going to ruin all of our night by not drinking? It's very intimidating. One of our deepest human needs is to fit in and be accepted, and choosing to go against the grain is very challenging.
And Ruby, Nori mentioned that she loved your 12-step program in your book, Sober Curious. And I don't want you to give the whole book away, but talk about how you developed your 12-step plan.
The 12 steps in my book, it's really the last kind of takeaway, and they sort of summarize all of the teachings that I give throughout the different books. So they're more just a backdrop, I suppose, to your journey going forward once you've onboarded everything that I've written and started to implement some of the changes in your life. They're more sort of motivational steps, I suppose.
And Nora, you founded a group, Women and Moms Living Alcohol Free. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I actually founded it 2 weeks ago. In the beginning of my sobriety, it was very lonely. You know, the connections that I made, I was able to find on Instagram and Facebook for various groups that I've been a part of. These women who I've never met have been very empowering, supportive. I use them for resources, the encouragement that I get, and I've never met any of them. And as women, we really thrive on these personal relationships. And so I thought, you know, there's probably a whole group out there that could be very curious, questioning their drinking, scared to do something about it, and don't know where to go. But then I also created it because I love connecting with new women. And, you know, I wanted to build sort of a platform or community, not as a recovery tool, but more as a connecting with each other, empowering with each other, share our stories, start a book club, have coffee, you know, just as a platform for these women to get together and, you know, spend time together, get to know each other without alcohol. So I really welcome anybody that is either sober curious, drinking a little, want to know more about not drinking at all, or you're alcohol free to, you know, find us and come join us.
Ruby, in our last few seconds here, what's your best advice for somebody who's thinking, yeah, this sounds like me. I think I want to pursue this lifestyle. How do they take that first step?
I think it's really important to find other people to be on this journey with you, even if it's just one other person in your life that you can kind of confide in and get to be on your side. So in those moments when you're feeling uncertain, you can have them reflect back at you that this is what you want for yourself, and to trust that voice inside that's saying, yes, I want to make a different choice. I think it's fantastic that there are so many different alcohol-free options coming onto the menu onto menus now that as we discussed, and I just think that's really going to explode over the next year as a whole industry rises up to meet this growing consumer demand for different options when it comes to living alcohol-free. And another really useful thing to do is just make a note, maybe you use the Notes app on your phone or actually write something down in a notepad, of just sort of three or four reasons as to why you're making this choice. So you can refer back to that list in moments of doubt and just remind yourself what you're choosing for yourself.
And Lindsay, what's the hot mocktail right now?
Oh, gosh. Seedlip is a non-alcoholic distilled spirit that has recently made big waves in the market. And I think anything involving that has probably been a big one.
Very cool. All right. Well, I'm not going to dare say any of your last names again after failing, but I will say thank you to Ruby, Lindsay, and Nori for being here to talk to us. We've got links to all of your information and organizations at WVXU.org in the Cincinnati Edition section. Thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier and Selena Reeder and Josh Elstrow. You can find archives of our show online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.